Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast. What would you do for a thumbs up from your poppy? Well, guys, today we're going to find out as we are discussing Crunk's New Groove as part of our Rotten Films Summer Drive-In series this year. We always do a series of quick little movie reviews during the summer with a different theme, and this year is Rotten. We're going to be trying to find the good in films that were rated 30% or less on Rotten Tomatoes. Crunk's New Groove has a zero. That's what we're talking about today. If you want to see the rest of the movies that we've discussed that are part of the Rotten Films series, you can do that with a link down in the show notes. I am Joshua Knoll. Nobody cares about that, except for because more than half the time, you hear Joshua Knoll, you're like, oh, I bet he's about to announce the greatest podcaster to ever podcast, live, breathe, or be thought of, the one and only TJ Tiberius on Blackwell. And you're right, I am. Welcome, TJ.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, we're going to jump right into this one. TJ, imagine we just left the drive-in. We went together because, like, for some reason, somewhere in Greenville, they were like, yo, we're going to do a drive-in film, and it's specifically Crunk's New Groove that was never even in the theater. And we were like, hell yeah. So we went and watched it. We got in the car. We're leaving the drive-in. You look at me and say what?
I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just look at you and go, my head hurts, and it's absolutely because I'm chronically challenged. Because that's probably the best thing that came from this film. It's just or, Crunk going, no, you can't do that to them. They're chronically challenged.
Or I would say, wow, that's way too much money for a movie that short.
True. I'm excited about this. Because it also reminds me a lot of two different things. One, it's like, okay, you could tell it's direct to video. And it does this weird thing, I will say, where it kind of feels like it's written to a younger audience than the original film, which is kind of weird. Who cares?
I mean, it is.
It's absolutely
direct to video.
Yeah. And it's absolutely like Crunk. Like, it's exactly what it advertised. It's like, what if we did a movie just about Crunk from Emperor's New Groove? And it's pretty much exactly what you would expect if you heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It is. There is no false advertising involved anywhere.
Yeah. Not in the least. And I love it.
It is Crunk's New Groove. It sure is.
It is a little bit like, to me, I think it does better job, but it reminds me of like the old Disney package films that happened during the World War era of Disney films, you know, where like it's like multiple stories in one, except for like with this, it's like there's a continuity. There's a reason for all the different stories that building to something instead of just being, you know, we just made four short films instead of one long movie and giving it to you as a movie, you know, like it still has like the connective tissue, like it makes sense. So I feel like it's even better than some of those.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think this one, Crunk's New Groove, I would say, is inoffensive, unlike some of the other Disney sequels.
Yeah. Also, really funny. But I'll give them a minute. I do want to do a summary. I was going to make TJ do it, but he hasn't seen it in a minute. But I feel like, yeah, as I summarize this, he's going to remember stuff and be like, oh, that's right. Effectively, it starts off as a funnier version of the beginning of Emperor's New Groove, where like Crunk's covered in cheese and he looks miserable and just kind of like Cusco was miserable as a llama. And you're like, that llama is me. Except for in this, you know, Crunk's like, that's me. And instead of being like, I was a lot better like a couple of days ago, Crunk's like, you wouldn't believe this, but I had the perfect life just earlier that day. Like, because he builds up how terrible his life is right now, but it used to be great earlier in the exact same day.
Yeah.
Of course. Yep. Yeah.
That I do think it also benefits a lot because unlike a good amount of the direct-to-video sequels, pretty much the entire vocal cast comes back for Croc's New Groove.
Yeah.
Which means we still get David Spade, Patrick Warburton, Eartha Kitt.
Yeah, and it's super noticeable. You're like, oh yeah, that's... You can't fake Patrick Warburton's voice.
No, you cannot.
Yeah. Oh, man. So... From there, it kind of goes back to earlier in the day, what happened, and it's basically just there's news that his dad's coming to town, and he's worried because he's been writing letters to his poppy and telling him about how he's got all the stuff that his poppy thought was the perfect life that he always wanted for him, you know, a wife, kids, and a house on the hill. And he goes, and he's like, I used to have all the stuff when I wrote to him, but I never told him that I lost it, and I've lost everything. And of course, in the middle of his shift working in a restaurant, which is also funny for me now working at a restaurant, because like I know people who do this, like this is made as like a cartoon, like exaggeration, but people definitely do this in restaurants. We're like, actually, I'm going to stop, not do my job and tell you my life story right now. Funny, but also so he goes through and he tells the story of like how he got a house on the hill, and it's because he was tricked by Yzma and ended up accidentally swindling a bunch of elderly out of their elderly home. Literally selling snake oil. Hilarious. But he gave up that home, gave it back to the elderly, right? And then how he was, and when he was a camp counselor, he met another camp counselor who was the perfect woman for him, but he ended up losing her because he realized that he made a mistake, told a child something, they misinterpreted it, and instead of letting the child take the blame so he could be with the girl, because the child isn't going to really suffer consequences, according to his devil on his shoulder, he was like, actually, instead, I'm still going to own up to what I did, and lost the girl. He lost the kids when that he was, you know, with camp counselor and stuff. And he's sad. Flashback to the future. He's in the restaurant. He accidentally convinces literally everyone to pretend to be his wife and that their house is his house. So his poppy shows up. He's like, I'm his wife. No, I'm his wife. And it's men dressed as women, women pretending to be his, kids pretending to be adults, elderly people pretending to be his children so that he can pretend to his poppy and get approval from his dad, because everybody loves Kronk so much that like all he wants is a thumbs up from his poppy. Yeah, the whole town's going to come together and pretend to be his family, and it'll result in a bunch of hijinks. Cheesemaker explodes, and he's like, Dad, I know you're not going to be proud of me, but I gave up everything for these people because these people mean more to me than anything. I wouldn't give up anything for them. And he's like, wait a minute, I actually mean that. I really wouldn't give up anything for them. And then, of course, at the end, his poppy's like, well, you're missing one thing still, and you're supposed to think he's going to be disappointed. And, of course, he does his thumbs up, and Kronk lives happily. Oh, also, the girl comes back because... While everybody else was like, oh, I know, we'll help Kronk lie to his dad. One of the children is the only one smart enough to go, wait a minute, I'm the reason he lost the girl? Heck nah. So when everybody else is doing all this stuff, one of the kids literally goes and finds that female camp counselor. He's like, hey, there was a lot of confusion here, some mistakes. She comes back, is with Kronk. So, yeah, Kronk finds out he has the whole community there, and a child is the only one smart enough to help him get back with the girl that he loved. Oh, and his poppy gave him a thumbs up, which is super important.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Completely necessary.
Yeah.
Driving motivation even.
Yeah. Also, the fondue night was his idea. Kronk's a genius.
Kronk is a genius.
Yeah, that's all. I think that's one of my favorite things about Kronk. Kronk and Pumbaa play similar roles in Disney films where like they're meant to be like the butt of the joke, the idiot of the group, but they're also definitely the smartest one there a lot of the time.
I would not go that far.
Different kinds of intelligence. Like Pumbaa knows that stars are burning balls of gas millions of miles away. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Kronk absolutely just knows how to set the elderly up at elderly home where they're going to be taken care of. It is the absolute best camp counselor and somehow learned how to speak squirrel.
That's true.
And is a genius chef, apparently.
That is true.
Just doesn't get credit for any of it.
That's actually a real Patrick Warburton talent. He can actually do that.
He can just talk to squirrels.
Yeah.
I like how I knew you didn't mean he's an expert chef. Patrick Warburton talent. I could assume he means chef. I'm going to assume he means talks to squirrels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That wasn't in the script. He just started doing it.
That's fantastic. Oh, man. I love Patrick Warburton. Everything he's in is great. And we should do an episode of just him. We did a Harrison Ford episode once. Why not a Patrick Warburton? Anyway,
yeah,
I'm getting derailed. TJ, all this in mind, why do you think this film got such a low ranking? You got a zero. Do you think it deserved it? And what's the best thing you think you can say about the film?
I don't think it deserved a zero. And I think it only got a zero because it has a low number of critic reviews.
Yeah, me too.
That is, I'm not saying it would be certified fresh or anything, but it would definitely, if it had, you know, thousands of critic reviews, I think it would sit comfortably maybe at like 35% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I mean, even the audience score was kind of low. I'm just shocked. I'm shocked that it's low at all, really. Like, I don't expect it to be like one of the highest, but I'm like, all the actors are there. It's really well done. It is hilarious. Some of like the bits where he's talking about the elderly is like the chronologically challenged. The like he has all these different words, you know, those who've got buckles for knuckles, for not buckles for knees. You know, does that, even when he's describing like the girl that he meets and like he's like, oh, she's like talking about how pretty she is. He's like, look at that jawline. It's a strong jaw. Look at those elbows. They're rough as leather. And you're just like, I love that. Like, I like, how do you watch this and not like just out of sheer entertainment, you know, not, disregarding whether the story is good or not, just sheer entertainment. How do you not at least give it a 50, you know?
Like, yeah, I absolutely agree.
Yeah,
I think Chronic's New Groove is easily the funniest Disney sequel, bar none. Easily the funniest. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I like rodents.
Yeah,
the fact that like talk to squirrels.
There's that, and then the fact that Yzma was like, "I have my perfect escape plan. If they turn on me, I turn myself into a bunny rabbit. No one could attack a bunny. They're too cute." Great, it's comedy
masterclass.
Gold.
Yeah, masterclass of writing.
God, it's so funny.
But like watching, you know, Kronk go through these things, and Kronk fall in love, and you know, the dance off and the bake off. It's a good time. And, you know, watching him mentor these little kids, you're like, oh, man, OK, Kronk really deserves this.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, of course, it gets the happy end in the end and he even gets the thumbs up. And some of that's kind of cheesy. But I think what I really love, too, is like one of my big criticisms against animated Disney films from like the 90s through the 2000s. It's all either about romance or family. Right. Like if you have family, you're going to have a great life. If you find the right spouse, you know, it's all about that. And then this film, like, it decides to go outside of the grain of Disney messaging. It's like, hey, actually, what if your life looks nothing like you expected? It doesn't necessarily have the perfect woman or any of that. And maybe it's about your community and the fact that you're just connected to other humans. And if you're happy as a fry cook without a house on the hill, without a kid and a family, that's fine. And like, that's just not a message you heard from Disney back then. So even like on the messaging front, I'm like, for me, it gets 50% just off the entertainment value, and then the messaging gives it an automatic 20. I'm starting at 70 when I rate this.
Yeah.
I don't know if it gets further than that. It's not a very complex story or anything, but that's probably like, that's the 70. It's 50% it gets automatic for pure entertainment, just sheer laughs. And then the other 20 is like, man, the messaging's actually really on point.
Yeah, I think 70 is a good spot for it.
Well, then there's nothing offensive to make it lose points. You know, none of the acting's bad. The writing's not bad. It's all inoffensive after that.
Well, there is something to be said about the taste. Your sense of humor will have a lot to do with how funny you think the movie is. Kronk's girlfriend's name is Miss Birdwell. She calls Kronk Kronky Poo. And of course, naturally, that means Kronk is going to call her Birdie Poo. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
Unless you're old.
And this is one of the few, like, for me, SpongeBob, Hercules, Shrek, most of my quotes come from those things. And I fully acknowledge, even if they're not my favorite, like, things you quote regularly for me tend to come from one of those. But man, the amount of times that I'm like, wait, you can't use that. That's mine. See, it says on there, Josh, property of Josh. Do not touch except for Josh. Like, I don't know why that bit specifically just ingrained in my brain.
Timeless.
Forever.
It's timeless.
Yeah, it's great. Man. Yeah. Well, then even like the gags where he's like, my dad, he's always giving me one of these or one of these. It's like doing the scowl of this and the anger face of, you know, the sour face. And it's just so funny. Just the gags are also great. All right, TJ, if you had to choose a favorite joke, favorite character, and favorite scene from this movie, what would they be?
Okay, my favorite character is obviously Kronk, easily.
Yeah. What if you had to do a secondary? Who would you pick?
Probably Miss Birdwell. I like her a lot. She's got nice, tough elbows and a really strong jaw. favorite scene is probably like the bake-off slash dance-off slash, like, you know, their little get together there. That is, it's just super colorful and super fun. That's always stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Favorite joke? I don't, just every conversation with the squirrels is really funny. They play it completely straight. No one's ever like, why is he doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, man, that's so funny to me.
My favorite joke's gonna get me in trouble because it's not okay in today's world, but I don't care. I'll get to that in a minute because I feel like I can't start with favorite joke. Favorite character, obviously, Kronk, which is why I was like, we had to do secondary. We can't just both be like, Kronk's new groove. It's about Kronk. Kronk's the best. It's true. Yes. But like, that's boring to say. Second one, I'm giving it to Rudy, the old man, because all you really see of him in the
movie, funny.
In the first movie, is like he gets thrown off the castle because he threw off the Emperor's groove. Such a classic movie. But anyway, to find out like him and Kronk have this deep relationship and how Kronk feels so bad because he accidentally swindled him and Kronk calls him his best friend. And, you know, even his subconscious angel and like, that's not your, it's like, yes, he is. And it's like, man, yeah, Kronk has this like meaningful relationship. Kronk who's I'm assuming he's like 20s or 30s. Elderly man is like on death's doorstep, right? They just have this whole deep, meaningful relationship. And I'm like, that's just so cool. And the fact that Rudy doesn't hold a grudge because like, oh, hey, you were a part of swindling us. Is like, hey, yeah, Kronk, you just got manipulated and we still love you. And you're like my best friend. And at the end of the movie, I'm going to pretend like I'm your child, even though I'm clearly like more than twice your age. Also, hilarious gag.
It is good.
Yeah. Favorite scene? Man, I'm going to be cheesy. My favorite scene is when the whole community shows up in support of Kronk. Because, like, even though he doesn't have a family, like, he just means so much to the whole community. And just to see a community that's just close like that and loves one another. I'm like, man, I wish we all lived in a community like that. And it kind of touches me, even though that's sappy and lame. But I don't care. Favorite joke? Chronicle Challenge is still hilarious. But... the problematic one I'm going to go with. What's his name? It's not Pacha, is it?
Mm-hmm.
It is Pacha. Pacha dresses up like a woman to pretend to be Kronk's wife. And then because he gets trapped, it's like he already has someone pretending to be his wife. He's like, oh, I'm his mother-in-law. And then to proceed to watch Kronk's poppy hit on him the whole time. Yeah, I know, cross-dressing, so trans stuff. Like there's a lot of problematic stuff why Disney wouldn't do that kind of joke now. But, man.
Yeah.
It's just so funny.
It is funny.
That Poppy just Pacha totally fell in love for a dude.
Pacha is built like a barn.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny because, like, you also kind of get a sense that, like, that's kind of where Kronk gets his taste. Because, you know, Kronk's like, oh, this one with a good strong jawline and leather elbows. And then his dad's like... oh, this woman's built like a barn. I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, great Pacha's stuff. Just like this huge, broad dude.
It's fantastic, man. Oh, man. So you would say people should definitely watch this movie then,
right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's short. It's not going to take that much time. If you liked Emperor's New Groove at all, this is probably worth it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like... what I would call TJ humor, where it's like just quick, dry one-liners. Like if you're paying attention, because it's not like exaggerated when he's like birdie poo. Like he doesn't exaggerate it. If you're not paying attention, you'll just miss that. Yeah. And there's just a lot of lines like that where like he's talking about the elderly people and he's like chronologically challenged. They have buckles for knees. They have the, like they don't stop for humor or anything. It just keeps going. Like that's totally ordinary stuff to say. So like you really got to pay attention, I feel like, to get all the humor. But it's great.
It is. It is great. I think really the entire Emperor's New Groove, like suite.
Yeah.
You know, like New School, Kronk's New Groove. They're all severely underrated.
Oh, for sure. That was the other thing I was going to say is like the other thing that I actually do really appreciate. A lot of times when Disney do these like direct to video films and they know they're about to do a show, the film is really just like a big pilot for the show. And it feels like a wasted opportunity a lot of the time. This way they didn't do that at all. Like this, like
Yeah, it helps if you watch the show, but like you don't need it for the show.
Yeah, it is interesting because a lot of the criticisms people levy against Kronk's New Groove is that it feels like one of those. That it's, you know, segmented, sort of, I forget the word.
Package film?
No. Sure. That works.
I don't know.
Not what I was going to say. But it feels like it's just several disconnected stories loosely tied together is what a lot of people say. And it's not. And Disney has been known to do that when they,
yeah.
What they'll do is they'll make the first few episodes of a show, they'll test poorly, and then they'll just release them as a movie. And that's not what happened here.
Yeah, because like the show
because they had a whole show.
And it's all about Kuzco.
Yeah.
And Kuzco is barely in this.
It's pretty good, too. Yeah, I like Emperor's New School.
I love the show. And I do. Like, I feel like the show also just kind of proves that this movie was meant to be what it is. I also do think a lot of, like, people's problem might be expectations. And, like, two different versions of that. Like, they go in expecting it to be a Disney classic film, like Emperor's New Groove. And it's not that. It's never going to be that when it's a direct-to-video because they don't have the budget for that. They're not going to hire the same quality writers and everything, right? And then the other side of that is, like, I feel like a lot of people go in, like, hating the direct-to-video movies and are just looking for a reason to hate it. And I'm like, man, yeah, you just got to pull a TJ and just watch it for what it is, and I think it's great.
Yeah. Most of them are worse than this.
That's true. Very few. Lion King and Toy Story sequels are pretty much the only ones better.
Yeah. None of the Toy Story sequels were even direct-to-video.
That's true. Lion King is the only direct-to-video sequel that I'm like, the Aladdin ones are also okay, but I still feel like I like this one better.
No.
Oh, you don't like the Aladdin one?
I think Return of Jafar is awful.
Return of the Jafar is not my favorite. I like it when it's in Kingdom Hearts 2. The King of Thieves I thought was pretty entertaining, though. But that's because it felt more like a sequel to the show than it did another movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else to say about Kronk's New Groove, squirrely comments, anything like that?
No.
Yeah, I think I'm good, too. It's just,
yeah,
it's a good show.
Movie's good.
Movie. Yeah. Check it out. So since it does talk about the societal norms, trying to get approval from his dad and from others, that kind of stuff, I want to touch on this a little bit because, like, as people who go to church, sometimes that stuff's helpful. We rely on some church tradition, right? Because we're like, okay, this is why we do communion. We do this, and we trust that because it's built and people done it for a long time and it's useful. And I think some societal norms are useful because, hey, this is what's worked for other people. So I think it's important not to just dismiss societal norms and do whatever you want, but I also feel like it's clearly harmful when we try to say you have to live according to how everybody else is doing stuff. So I guess just want to ask TJ, how do we know when societal norms are helpful tools for us and we're using them that way, or when we're holding ourselves to a standard that we don't need to be holding ourselves to?
I think it's difficult when a societal norm is something you're, you know, expected to be. People expect you to do this and that, and they're weighing that against you. I think that's not beneficial.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. I kind of feel like societal norms, traditions, whatever you want to call them, it's like a hammer. I feel like you can use it to build or you can use it to harm. Like, it can be a little bit of both. It is helpful sometimes to look at, like, what did my parents do? How did they make their relationship work? Or, like, what did the church do the last 1,000 years that led it to flourish during, like, World War II even? You know, different times. It's helpful to look at that stuff and then build what we have now off of what worked before. It's not helpful when, like, man, I feel like I have to be into computers because my dad was in computers, and I just don't like computers. You know, like, you know.
That's my thing about it, is you'll have professional athletes, Wayne Gretzky's children. You know how many of Wayne Gretzky's children play hockey?
Half of them.
I think it's one.
How many does he have?
Three.
Oh, okay.
Don't quote me on that. But his daughter married a golfer. None of their kids play hockey.
How sad. But, like, yeah, I mean, I think that's just it. It's, are you using it to look to see how you might want to build it up, or are you using it, or is it being used in a way to make you feel guilty or bad about who you are?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it's helping inspire you and giving you guidelines, cool. Is it making you feel bad and tearing you down? Not cool. I feel like that's a pretty simple test.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Or specifically text TJ at 777-7777. And he'll tell you whether or not it's a good idea or not.
Oh, well.
Yeah, do that. All right. With that, we're going to get into the wrap up. But first, TJ, I need to know what treat or snack would people maybe not think of for a drive-in movie that actually might be the perfect snack? They just haven't thought of it yet.
Probably a roast.
Mm.
A Chuck roast. You got to hear me out.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
So you need to have a little bit bigger of a car, right? You need to roast
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Probably the day before, unless it's a really late drive-in. And you just take it in that cheap aluminum pan. You take a couple of forks and you put that roast right in the center console and you just pick off the roast.
Ooh. Okay. I like that, actually. At first, I was like, he's just trying to come up with something silly. I was like, actually, that could work. Depending on how far away you are, because like I don't want your food to get cold. But I'm thinking like if I make some like pulled pork barbecue and like a big thing of mac and cheese, like just like a bucket mixed it in, I could just sit there. Like that's just a good comfort munch food. And I think that would be great.
I was also thinking caramel corn. That seems too easy though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Also Cheez-Its. For some reason, I just don't see people eating Cheez-Its at theaters that often, but I'm like, I feel like that's great.
Same. Well, I think Cheez-Its are popcorn. Loud.
It's just great. That might be it. I don't know. But anyway, guys, let us know what you think. What's a unique food you think would be great for a drive-in? You can comment on Spotify now, so you can let us know wherever you want. Rate and review this show, if you will, on Podchaser or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, I guess. Either one. And check out, again, the show notes down below the description if you want the playlist to the whole Rotten Films Summer Drive-In Series. And check out what other movies we've discussed. And remember, of course, we're all a chosen people, a geekdom, a priest. Later.
Here at Systematic Ecology, we believe in a few things. We believe that there is freedom in Christ to like what you like. We believe that Christian nationalism is a heresy. And probably most important that I'm going to talk about today, at least, is that we believe the best place to spend your extra cash is on the Systematic Ecology merch store. That's right. This is a shameless shill for our own products. We go through Creator Spring and we have a few great products on there. Me personally, I'm a big like black shirt kind of guy, you know, muted colors. But there's nothing better to like throw a little some extra on there with like a black baseball cap, the dad hat. With the Systematic Ecology logo on it. That's a classic. I just really think if you've got a couple, you know, 30 extra dollars, that's for us.
Hello, Systematic Ecology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our NSL podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym, the Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Knoll does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, And We'll Laugh About That Later is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.